thank you very much. You know, we're blessed. Right now is a beautiful time of the year. And there's a lot of, go ahead, Donna. There's a lot of people out there on the other side of these mountains who are not faring quite so easily. And from the crest to the Atlantic is all really tough. Millions, hundreds of millions of our brethren in this country are hurting. And this, our country is not alone. France, Europe is under tremendous strain. We were talking to some friends on, what was that, Thursday night, and they had to cancel their river trip in Amsterdam and on the Rhine because the Rhine's too low and it's too hot. So thanks to Barbara, and thanks to the Spiritual Passages newsletter, we have our inspiration this morning. The fires are more than environmental disasters. They're a visible expression of imbalance, a sign that the living systems of our planet are under profound strain. No secret there. Huh? The earth is not separate from us. I think I want to make that very important. We are the earth. We belong to it. It does not belong to us. We breathe because the forests breathe. We drink because the rivers flow. We are sustained by soil, sunlight, rain, and countless forms of life working together in sacred interdependence. This is not a time for despair or denial or blame. It's a time for conscious relationship. We are being called to remember that stewardship is a spiritual practice. The choices we make individually, collectively, economically, and politically reveal what we truly value. The climate crisis is asking, or demanding actually, that our reverence be expressed through action. It asks us to live with greater awareness, reduce harm where we can, support wise leadership, protect vulnerable communities, and restore balance whenever possible. In every conversation, I might say. May these fires deepen our compassion for all who are affected. May they strengthen our resolve to care for this planet. And may we remember that healing the earth begins with healing our relationship with earth through prayer, love, responsibility, and awakened reaction. Action, not reaction. Thank you, Barbara, for that.
Let's get centered first. I really like to do our meditation and then move into the prayer requests. And the reason is that I like to hold the space that we're holding for whatever it is, the issues are, the challenges, the celebrations, from that center. And so if we start with our meditation, it's our opportunity to get to that center. Am I making noise?
You're fine.
It feels like... Okay. And so I'm going to invite you all to get centered, to feel your presence here in the room. Perry's had us thinking about the earth, that we belong to the earth. What a lovely place to start this morning. I belong to the earth. If it feels comfortable, close your eyes. Divine Beloved, Mother Earth, who is Divine Beloved as the Earth, I breathe and allow my breath to cleanse, to purify, to renew. To begin again. And as I breathe, I allow myself to be grounded. I send the roots of my being down through my feet into the ground, into the earth. Just as our beautiful grandfather trees all around us are rooted deeply into the sacred earth, so am I. And Mother Earth, Gaia, I ask you to receive these roots. Take them unto you, into your heart. For I am of you. I am your child. Embrace me, hold me. I receive your love, your strength, your resilience up through those roots into my heart. Into my essence, my beingness. Indeed, I am renewed. I am strengthened. And Mother, as your child, I go forth. To love. To serve. To heal. Oh, Mother, heal thyself through me. Divine beloved, in you all things are possible. And we call forth this rebalancing on our precious earth. let there be peace. Let there be peace. There is peace. And as we breathe this peace and allow this peace to infill us, I encourage you to feel your presence here in the room. And as we sit among our grandfather trees this morning, there may be someone who comes to mind to you who could use this reminder, who could use this embrace, who could use this rebalancing. Maybe a challenge, a concern, a celebration. And is there someone you would like us to hold with you? And we'll start with our dear friends, our family, our Zoom family. Is there anyone there, dear ones, you'd like us to hold with you this morning? So when I was thinking about what I would talk about today, because I'm back again and I was only here, what, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? Change in schedule and stuff. So I was thinking about, and I was still thinking about what we talked about when I was here last time. And so for some reason, the title started out, it became Considering Again for the First Time. What? Considering Again for the First Time. And I felt myself thinking about what we've called for a while climate change, and now we're calling it climate crisis because that's what it is. And those of us who've been on the planet for a while knows that we've known about this and been talking about this for decades. Decades. We've been preparing for it. We've been resisting it. We've been arguing about it. And sometimes hoping it would remain somewhere far off in the future. Ignoring it is absolutely part of it, you bet. But now it's here. And anyone who still wants to deny that needs a doctor. And as Perry was saying, we can see it in the fires, the floods, this heat, the storms, the water concerns, the displacement, and the anxiety many people carry about what comes next. And the anxiety we ourselves may be carrying about what comes next. But what we know is true is that it's not about blame. It is not about despair. It's about spiritual sight. Bill, I continue to have feedback. Can you adjust that a little bit? Can you hear that? Can you just maybe turn me down a little bit? It's about the spiritual sight. And I'm still hearing it. You don't hear it? Okay. Okay. The spiritual sight, the willingness to consider again for the first time what this moment may be asking us. So what we did or didn't do, what they did or didn't do, no longer matters, does it? It doesn't. It's a waste of time and energy to place the blame. To say, well, I told you, does not matter at this point. What matters is how do we move forward now? Who are we now in this moment? To consider something again for the first time means to set down old assumptions, clear the mind, and look at a familiar idea. Like I said, we've been thinking about this for a long time. to look at a familiar idea, person, or problem as if we're seeing it with brand new eyes. And dear ones, that's what we need. We might also think of this as choosing to begin again, as writing a new story, or at least a new chapter in the story. Life is messy, imperfect, and sometimes crushing, but our story is not finished. When we remember that, we can access the curiosity and bravery required to move through this uncertainty together. So when I was thinking about this and how I might approach this concept today, I thought about one of my most favorite Unity teachers, Ernest Wilson. And you've heard me talk about him before because I just love Ernest Wilson. He's just one of my most favorites. If you ever delve into Ernest Wilson's writings, I just know you'll get that feeling of him. He was just the yummiest Unity teacher. And today I'm quoting from his book, The Great Physician. Ernest Wilson was born in 1896, and he passed away in 1986, and he was a very prolific Unity teacher and writer. He was a great Unity teacher for a long time, and he actually at one point was the editor-in-chief of all the Unity publications. He was the one who created Unity's Christmas candle lighting service, and also Unity's Easter flower ceremony that we have done a few times. And the thing that one of my most favorite things about Ernest was he spent a lot of time in the LA area back in the 60s. In fact, he started the huge Christ Unity Church in LA. He started that church. And at the time, remember Betty White, the comedian Betty White? She had a regular talk show in LA. It was a daily talk show kind of thing. And Ernest Wilson was one of her regular guests. And he would come on and he would share the daily word on her show. And people attribute the large Unity presence in Southern California to that's where it started, was when Ernest Wilson was sharing the daily word on Betty White's show back in the 60s. Don't you love that? He was a wonderful teacher. And anyway, and I'm going to share some of this from The Great Physician. And he was, you know, from the era where he said man all the time, and we'll deal with that. And I'll try to plug in human, and if I forget, you'll forgive me. He says, everyone in his human nature makes mistakes, but everyone in his divine nature has the power to overcome them. Oftentimes, neither the mistakes nor the overcoming of them is so important as what happens to the mistake maker in the overcoming process. I love that. And it's important now, isn't it, as we deal with where we are in the world. How often the lesser conceals the greater. We work for some little goal and take steps towards bigger ones. It is almost as if some benign power were giving the little self of us some blocks to play with while our giant self builds a skyscraper. A man stumbles over a rock and finds a gold mine. Columbus set out to prove the earth is round by going the wrong way to India and bumps into America. A clerk quits his job only to learn that his promotion was imminent, but he is virtually forced into a much better position in the course his life has changed forever. Yes, even our so-called mistakes seem to be divine direction, but are they? Suppose the mistake had never been made. Should we have missed the blessing? For the time, perhaps, but evidently there is something mightier than circumstances working through our life. As water seeks its level and despises no channel, however humble or circuitous, to reach its parent sea, so that something in our life works through varied circumstances to bless us. We are one with the inescapable good. What difference then what course we take through life? Simply this, that it is possible to use a very great deal of time and energy in learning ways not to do things. It is for some real or fancied reason we do not learn otherwise than by the trial and error method. We must learn through that method. In the process of learning, we shall find many blessings. We shall grow in matters of tolerance and patience and courage and faith. But by choosing our course of thought and action with deference to the Spirit within us, we shall learn with less effort and stress. To the practical Christian, life is not simply a series of lessons, decisions, or overcomings. He meets with faith and courage what comes into his life, and he knows that how he meets these things is more important than what he has to meet. He's not afraid because he knows God's presence. He trusts God to guide, direct, and prosper him. He is not misled and overcome by the panicky senses that cry wolf at every outward change. His reliance is on the underlying verities or truths that are unchanging. He knows that everything that ever was real or true is still real or true. The laws of mathematics have not changed. The law of action and reaction is the same. The stars still come nightly into the sky. The heavens still declare the glory of God. Before he gives way to fear of the future or of the present or of the past, he remembers these things. Yesterday, today, tomorrow, these things belong to us humans. We do them, we do with them what we will. We grow through them in an awareness of something that transcends them and in which we find our happiness, success, and perfection. Eternity, the ever-present now, is God's. Back of humans' more or less imaginary world, back of the things he hopes and fears, is God's world, steady, sure, unchanging. Back of humans' thought about himself is God's faith in him, secure and changeless. Dear ones, lean back on this larger, truer world of God's. Rest in it for a moment. Imagine, if you can, what he thinks about the things that trouble you. Is God discouraged? Is God disappointed with his world? With humanity? With you? Has God given up? Is depression too much for God? Are human problems too great for God? Too great for God in you? You know that they are not. It is human to be afraid sometimes. Whenever we forget for a moment the real truth about life and ourselves, we are likely to be fearful. That is not overly important, but how we meet our fears is very important. The story is told of the private in World War I who had to take part in an advance upon the enemy. He drew back and cried, "I'm afraid." "How do you think the rest of us feel?" a young officer asked, slapping him on the back. The private took new courage from the retort. They were all afraid, but they did not succumb to the fear. And that is the line I want us to hear today, dear ones. They were afraid, but they were in it together. The last time I was here with you a couple weeks ago, we talked about how two people with opposite opinions can sometimes make room for a third possibility. Do you remember that? It only becomes possible when they step off the platform of "I'm right and you're wrong," and become willing to see that each person's opinion has been shaped by a different history, a different fear, a different set of experiences. When we look at the world we're living in, the predictions, the consequences, the losses, and the choices still before us, it's easy to fall into the coulda, shoulda, woulda, isn't it? If only we had acted sooner. If only we'd believed it. If only you'd given up that gas guzzler. If only I had recycled more, conserved more water, taken more responsibility. The way of thinking turns quickly into blame. You're bad. I'm bad. We're all bad. But blame does not heal the earth, dear ones. Steady the heart or call forth our best. It doesn't. Blame is not going to fix it. Not at all. And it may be hard to let go of the blame because we feel justified for it. We've been talking about this for a long time. We tried to tell you. Right? Yep. It's really easy. It's really easy to feel the blame. But right now, dear ones, it's time for that third possibility. We've seen glimpses of that third possibility whenever people meet the moment instead of retreating from it. Think of our dear brothers and sisters in Spokane. Have you seen what's going on and what's been going on over there the last week? Do you not know about the fires in Spokane? My understanding now, the count is up to over 900 structures have been lost, most of them homes. Most of them homes. They've talked about it as Spokane's Palisades fire. Because it was that violent. But the thing that has been so amazing about it is the way the people have been responding to it. How the people have been taking care of each other, doing what needs to be done, finding another way in the middle of the destruction and disruption of their lives. Because that's what we do, people. That's what humans do. Did you hear about the Bite of Seattle shooting last Sunday? Did you hear what happened there? Did you hear about the story of the woman in Lower Queen Anne who lives right on the edge of the Seattle Center? And when all the people were running when the shooting started, the people were running, and she opened her door and invited people to come into her house. She had, I don't know how many people in her house. They were standing nose to nose. There were so many people, but she was providing a safe space for them. She didn't know any of them. Never saw any of them before. But she opened her door and said, "Come in, be safe." She didn't ask, "What side are you on?" She said, "Come in, be safe." Over the years, during disasters, I have watched local television and listened to radio coverage, not only to bless the situation, but also to observe the caring and connection that rises up almost immediately. Almost immediately, invariably, doesn't matter where it is on the earth. Sometimes I'd have to search to find a station that was in English if it was somewhere else, Japan or somewhere in Europe. But it was always the same. Telling the details of what's happening and then moving into how can we help? What can we do to help? Snowstorms, earthquakes, floods, again and again, people help each other. The dividers disappear. They do not matter nearly as much as we thought they did. That's the point. And that may be what leads us down a new path as we face the results of our choices. Not panic, not blame, not denial, but a deeper willingness to meet this moment together. So as we see all this that we've been fearing and hearing about for so long now coming to pass in all kinds of ways, and I'm sure we haven't even seen the biggest part of it as yet, but it's possible that the invitation in the midst of it is really quite simple. To lean back into the larger, truer world of God. To remember that fear may visit us, but it does not have to lead us. And to consider again, for the first time, who we are called to be now. What it was before doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Don't waste any time there now. It's about who we are now and how do we move forward from here now. And that energy will bring forth the solutions. That energy will show us the way. That will allow us to strengthen our roots into Mother Earth. Do you think Mother Earth is going down? No. No. The solutions are there. It's up to us to open our hearts so that we have the mind, the ears, and the eyes to behold it. And we will. And for the opportunity to walk with you together through it, I feel blessed and I am grateful. And so it is. Much love. Blessings, everyone.